we ended overtime and prematurely yesterday. We were reviewing the last paragraph of the purport to text 5. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advises the devotee to be intelligent enough to distinguish between the Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttam Adhikari. The devotee should also know his own position and should not try to imitate a devotee situated on a higher platform. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given some practical hints to the effect that an Uttam Adhikari devotee, Vaishnava, can be recognized by his ability to convert many fallen souls to Vaishnavism. One should not become a spiritual master unless he has attained the platform of Uttam Adhikari. A neophyte Vaishnava or a Vaishnava situated on the intermediate platform can also accept disciples, but such disciples must be on the same platform, and it should be understood that they cannot advance very well toward the ultimate goal of life under his insufficient guidance. Therefore, a disciple should be careful to accept an Uttam Adhikari as a spiritual master. And we were thinking about that and discussing it as the class ended yesterday. And are there some further comments or questions?
Yeah, Maharaj, yesterday we read that the GBC is not saying that all the gurus in ISKCON are Uttam Adhikaris.
Nope, they're not even saying they're Madhyam Adhikaris.
So from this point, it can be that in ISKCON there are even Kanishta or Madhyam gurus.
Could be.
And also, while discussing this topic, I heard that actually there is like one reference to the Shastra, which says like, when the guru just follow his pure guru, his guru who is in a pure state, the Uttam Adhikari, and he's not distracting anything, not putting anything new to it, then he's just the link, like a transparent medium, and then there's a connection to the ultimate goal as well, through the flow of Parampara in this sense. But somehow or other this theory or this system is like a little contradiction to the statement that like a Madhyam guru can just bring the disciples to the Madhyam platform.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not clear about this point much.
There are, let's see. It's understood, first of all, that even the Uttam Adhikari is functioning simply as a transparent medium to the previous acharyas. That Prabhupada said that's about himself, that's my qualification. That I've not added anything or changed anything or subtracted anything. That I'm simply acting as a peon carrying out the orders of my spiritual master. And the example of the transparent medium is always there for any status of spiritual master. Prabhupada's usual example was that I have my spectacles, and without them I don't see, and with them I see, but it's through the transparent medium of the spectacles. The thing is there, my eyes are there, the glasses are not adding or subtracting, but with the glasses I see properly. So that's the function of the spiritual master. He delivers the message. He delivers the message coming from disciplic succession, and he receives the service of the disciple and conveys it up. The message comes from down, and mercy comes from down, comes from up to down, and the service comes from down and is handed up. That's the function. The someplace in Maybe you're familiar with that in Easy Journey to Other Planets. There's some idea about monitor. And where were you quoting from, one of Prabhupada's books? Or where were you citing?
I don't know. I just don't know this part here from where you just read out. And the other side, I just remembered. I heard it in some discussions.
Yeah, in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada said, summarizing again the different principles of devotional service. What is it exactly?
I think it was Chaitanya.
These are, yeah, here, well, I'm looking here at, Easy Journey to Other Planets, where Prabhupada is saying that the spiritual master must not take on unlimited disciples. We've discussed that several times. This means that a candidate who has successfully followed the first 12 items of devotional service can also become a spiritual master himself, just as a student becomes a monitor in class with a limited number of disciples. Mm-hmm. That point is there. He's a student, and he's not unlimitedly powerful. But he's performing the function, having successfully followed the first 12 principles. First 12 principles are, must accept a bona fide spiritual master, must take initiation, must satisfy the spiritual master, must place questions before the spiritual master, try to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and so on. In many places in Prabhupada's books and writings, it's assumed that, or it's emphasized, Prabhupada's constant emphasis is, as Prabhupada put it one time in his last days, little thing, simply follow. Little thing, simply follow. And that's the qualification of guru. That he has to follow the instructions received from his spiritual master. Strictly follow. And the same thing that you've heard, repeat. I think we mentioned the other day, I'll probably pick it up fast from that same correspondence. Bear with me a minute. What is this going on? Okay. Looking for a couple of nice quotations here that happen to be around. Better that I'm not looking here because I'll get distracted. Focusing again, focusing my thoughts. His main qualification is that he remains the servant of his spiritual master. What his spiritual master has said, he does. That's the qualification. That's the thing Prabhupada most emphasized. He didn't talk that much about Uttamadhikari and so many things like that. Thing is again and again saying, Amaragyai Guruhan Tare Desh Jari Dako Tare Kava Krishna Padesh. The same instruction you've received from your spiritual master, you repeat that. Where did I find that? Oh, I know where I can find that quotation. Okay, bear with me a moment more. This is, I think we quoted this before in the class. People in general, they cannot understand, but those who are preaching, they must be very sincere. The same way. Rupa Raghunatha Pare Hoibe Akuti. They should read the literatures, the instruction, just like Upadesh Amrita, the nectar of instruction. We should follow, strictly follow. Then, Prithivim Sashishyat. Then you'll be able to preach and make disciples all over the world. This is the injunction. That's the thing that Prabhupada said again and again. That was the main, thrust of it. That's the main thrust of it that Prabhupada said. This is to Tushta Krishna Swami, the late Tushta Krishna Swami. I mentioned him as being, he's the same person who received that letter about Siddhasroop and non-Siddhasroop. Very nice god brother in many ways. This is a letter from November 1975. Every student is expected to become Acharya. Acharya means one who knows the scriptural injunctions and follows them practically in life and teaches them to his disciples. I have given you sannyas with the great hope that in my absence you will preach the cult throughout the world and thus become recognized by Krishna as the most sincere servant of the Lord. So I'm very pleased that you have not deviated from the principles I have taught, and thus with power of attorney go on preaching Krishna consciousness. That will make me very happy, as it is confirmed in the Guru Vastakam, Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasada. Just by satisfying your spiritual master, who is accepted as the bona fide representative of the Lord, you satisfy Krishna immediately, without any doubt. Keep trained up very rigidly, and then you are a bona fide guru, and you can accept disciples on the same principle. But as a matter of etiquette, it is the custom that during the lifetime of your spiritual master, you bring the prospective disciples to him. And in his absence or disappearance, you can accept disciples without any limitation. This is the law of disciplic succession. I want to see my disciples become bona fide spiritual master and spread Krishna consciousness very widely. That will make me and Krishna very happy. Yes?
Mark, if I understand it right, the message itself is pure.
Mm-hmm.
And the guru is just serving or acting as a postman, delivering this pure message.
Yes.
Not putting anything or just take anything away.
Yes.
Give the message pure as it is.
Yes.
And then if he's acting like this, then it's not matter so much his personal qualification, his personal...
That is his qualification. His qualification matters. That is his qualification.
Okay. This qualification.
If he doesn't do that, he's disqualified. If he doesn't strictly stick to the... Say, if he changes the message or doesn't deliver the message or adds some new message or if he doesn't strictly follow the message, that's his disqualification. But if he strictly follows, little thing, simply follow, and gives the message as it is, very rigidly, Prabhupada said, keep trained up very rigidly, and then you are bona fide. Then you are bona fide guru. And you can accept disciples on the same principle. By the way, for those people from outlying areas like Bangalore who come up with this thing that, yes, but the guru has to give the order. Yes, he said everyone should become guru, but he has to. When did he specifically give the order? Well, at least he ordered Tushta Krishna. You know, if this isn't an order, what is? You know, you have to ask, what constitutes an order? I mean, if this isn't an order, keep trained up very rigidly, and then you are a bona fide guru, and you can accept disciples on the same principle. If that's not an order, what is? Right? Keep trained up very rigidly, and you can accept disciples. As a matter of etiquette, during the lifetime of your spiritual master, no. But after in his absence or disappearance, you can accept disciples without any limitation. Now, if that's not an order, what do I have to do? Get, you know, a notarized, stamped, triple signed, you know, IAC Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, do hereby appoint. Now, this is an order if you look at, I mean, you know, it's an order. So all they can say is, no one was ordered to become guru except Tushta Krishna. Which is really a dumb thing to say. And since that's such a dumb thing to say, they say something else dumb. They say that, well, he was really a deviant person. He wasn't very, you know, he was with that Hawaii group. He wasn't really very much following Prabhupada. So Prabhupada just said this as a kind of a, you know, throw him a crumb. You know, he said it, but, you know, as if Prabhupada was so weak that he just, you know, threw his disciples crumbs to keep them happy. But even by that theory, anyway, for whatever Prabhupada's reason was, he authorized Tushta Krishna, and only Tushta Krishna, according to their theory, which is the stupidest idea in the world. You know, he didn't authorize any of the people who were strictly following within ISKCON, doing his main work. None of those people were approved by Srila Prabhupada. Only Tushta Krishna with the Hawaii group was specifically approved by Srila Prabhupada, and all the others had no authority. Dumb. So at least it seems to me that you have to say that Tushta Krishna was authorized. You know, that Prabhupada wanted to be the only Prabhupada wanted to be the only guru for the next 10,000 years, except that Tushta Krishna during his lifetime could also initiate and be a bona fide spiritual master and have his own disciples. That's, you know, if you want to go by the black and white, that's what you have to say. If you accept the final order, there's a final order, it's Prabhupada for the next 10,000 years and Tushta Krishna. Right? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
I wanted to ask, from what importance is understanding of the guru? Because, for example, if he's Manyama, is there a connection between his platform and what extent he can understand the message of his guru?
Yeah. Not the extent to which he can understand, but has understood. Uttamadhikari means realization. I may understand to some extent, but Uttamadhikari means he's reached the highest level of realization. If I'm not an Uttamadhikari, I haven't reached that highest level. I'm somewhere in the middle. So that means my understanding, at least in terms of realization, realized understanding, has not yet reached the highest platform. I may be eligible to go further, but I have not yet done that. Yes?
So that means that when the ego is not like on the Uttama platform, he cannot be like love God because he don't have his real life.
When the guru is Madhyam, he cannot give you love of God because he's not realized. He gives you the process. And by that process, you get everything. It's not that the guru will just, you know, touch you on the head and you'll get love of God. But you'll get the process. When Prabhupada said Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, he explains in his purport to that verse that the Bhakti Lata Bij is the process of devotional service. The seed is the process. If you get that seed, then by the mercy of Krishna and by the mercy of the Guru, everything will come. Everything will come. Now, when we look here, we say, he's not a Mukbhuta Madhikari, the disciple's not going to advance adequately. We can take that view. We have a scriptural statement for it, if you like.
Does it mean you can even realize it, like knowledge, even when the guru don't have it?
Excuse me?
You can even realize knowledge what the own guru don't have.
So that may be there.
You can even like be more advanced than your own guru.
That may be there, that you may, but the disciple never thinks that now I've advanced beyond my own guru. That will never be. But sometimes we may find that the disciple becomes more. What can you say? Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the guru of, is the disciple of Ishwarapuri. Chaitanya, what about Madhvacharya? Ah, that Madhvacharya is considered more elevated than his. Maybe. Of course, we trace Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyas, so we don't consider him. But actually, these distinctions we don't make. You know, we don't say that this acharya was more realized than that acharya. We avoid such. You know, what do we know? We're looking up at all the acharyas. One meaning of Maya is the measuring propensity. For us to start measuring the acharyas quickly leads to offenses. Yes?
I don't understand the statement that one can only be a spiritual master unless he has attained the best of the wisdom of Adhikarya.
Yeah. It's very clear. It's just not entirely consistent with what Prabhupada's directed elsewhere, but it's entirely clear that unless you're an Uttamadhikari, you shouldn't accept disciples. You can, but if you do, you won't be able to give adequate guidance to them, and they won't be able to advance beyond that same level, right? Is that what it says, essentially?
Yeah.
That's what it says. It's very clear. There's nothing there that can't be understood. Very straightforward and clear, isn't it?
Right, you get all the different statements.
I mean, taking that statement on its own, it's very clear and straightforward, isn't it?
I mean, the connection with other statements.
Yeah, when you look at other statements, as typically happens in our studies, we find that over here it says A and over there it says B. That happens. that happens. I was thinking about it this morning, anticipating this class, how Prabhupada had many times given his expressed his practical intention that his disciples should initiate. There's some letter in 1972 or something, early 1970s, that perhaps within a few years all the GBC men will initiate. Now, presumably, Srila Prabhupada was aware that not all the members of the GBC were Uttamadikaris. The rest of us were aware, so I'm sure Prabhupada was. But there was, you know, Prabhupada clearly expressed his intention. Prabhupada expressed here to Tushta Krishna, who, Tushta Krishna Swami, who was not the, you know, Prabhupada's leading disciple or, you know, the person who is most in the mainstream of Prabhupada's movement. But Prabhupada clearly expresses here, yes, you, after my departure you can initiate. Just stick to these principles and I'll be happy and Krishna will be happy. He doesn't say, whoa, wait a second, Krishna, are you an Uttamadikari? Just doesn't take it into account. And that there's that lecture in Mayapur. Doesn't take it into account. Just says, what was it? And we read it. Just strictly follow Prithivim Sashishyat. Be very sincere, read the literature, strictly follow. Then you'll be able to preach and make disciples all over the world. That's the injunction. And of course, we're told that that means Shishya Guru, but Prabhupada never says, then you can become a Shishya Guru. He says, preach and make disciples. There's nothing in the letter to Tushta Krishna that says Shishya Guru. It's very clear. You can become a Shishya Guru in Prabhupada's presence. So Prabhupada says, in his absence or after his departure. Clear what he means. And there's lots and lots of instructions. It was understood during Prabhupada's time. You know, it's not understood now in certain parts of South India, but it was well understood all over the world in Prabhupada's time that after his departure, his disciples would initiate. I understood that in 1968. And I was still Bhakta such and such. I asked questions and understood that much. We all understood, that's the system. Spiritual master initiates, and after his departure, his disciples initiate. We all do that. Very standard understanding. And Prabhupada made it clear that that was his intention also. Not that there was going to be something new and mystical and far out. And presumably he knew that not all of his disciples, or not even his leading disciples or sannyasi disciples, would be, according to all the different measurements we looked at, Uttamadikaris. By some measurement they would be. They all wear tilak and neck beads. But according to other measurements that we've looked at, you know, they may not fit the bill. But Prabhupada says, keep trained up, strictly follow, deliver the message as it is, do the job. Yes?
Maharaj, you just explained that actually this Bhakti Lata is a process. Mm-hmm. The process is pure. Like in the seed of the bandhan tree, everything is already there, mm-hmm. the potential. So the process is pure. Mm. At the same time, we read in Nectar of Devotion that the 64 items of this process, they need to be executed under the guidance. Mm. And so, but
the spiritual master should know what he's doing. Prabhupada said they should read the literatures. If you don't read the books, you're not going to know the science. If you don't know the science, what are you going to tell your disciples? Just chant Hare Krishna. You know, like That's good, just January, but that's fine. But, you know, if the disciple has wants any further detail, you're going to be at a loss because you haven't read the book. So it was 20 years ago since when you last dusted them off. But the answers are there in the books. So we should read the books, we should execute the process so that we'll understand the books by realization. We should faithfully serve our spiritual master so that we can guide others. Even the guy in Bangalore does that. Right? When one of his people comes to him with a spiritual question, he doesn't just say, go read the books, go read the books, go read the books, go read the books. He tries to give some instruction. You should do this because Prabhupada wanted us to do that. Sometimes he gives very good instructions. You should distribute Prabhupada's books.
Yeah.
Very good instruction. Sometimes he gets it wrong. Lots of times he gets it wrong, but sometimes he gets it right. Bhajri Narayan Prabhu, my godbrother, his uncle, I think, used to say that even a stopped clock is right twice a day. Yes.
Well, just now you mentioned that when we start measuring the acharyas, you know, we're quickly going to get into trouble. Make offenses. So in the same vein, although it's mentioned here in Network Devotees that we should look for an Uttama Adhikari, if we go around now and devotees searching, okay, do you know such a mommy? He's not Uttama Adhikari, he may be a Mariam. You know, quickly start making offenses like this. So perhaps, you know, the only criteria, like you were saying earlier, was that, you know, the qualification could just be that it is a postman living in the
day. Well, first of all, it's not offensive to try to understand the qualifications of the people that we're thinking of approaching. It's not really offensive to want to know, is this person an advanced devotee? Uttamadhikari means advanced devotee. It's not unreasonable for us to want to know, is this person that I'm thinking about considered an advanced devotee? Do you consider him an advanced devotee? That's not an offensive consideration. If the person I trust considers him a neophyte or less than neophyte, or, you know, the person who's not following or whatever, I want to know about that. I wouldn't want to be shined on just because, you know, he doesn't want to commit offenses and let me know that the person's, you know, has a problem with smoking and chants four rounds a day. You know, it's realistic to want to know, and reasonable to want to know. Is this person considered advanced? Is he, you know, is he following? Is he in Prabhupada's line? Or is he a person who's really not known to be struggling and having a hard time? And, well, it's a reasonable question. I'd want to know. I don't think it's offensive for me to ask, you know, this person, would you consider him an advanced devotee? Now, it also requires your understanding, after reading the books, your thoughts about what does it mean to be an advanced devotee? What matters to me? And what am I looking for here? Qualifications Prabhupada most often emphasized are strictly following and gives the message as it is, strictly dedicated to his spiritual master. And he gives the hint, making many devotees all over the world. He has the potency to do that. These are the things Prabhupada most often emphasized. Now, if you have other concerns that matter to you, that you find in the books, and you want to, you know, you want to make sure that those criteria are met, that's up to you. There's nobody, you know, what authority do I have to say, no, I'm sorry, even though it's in the books, you can't look for that. You can't look at that point. It's up to you. What matters to you most? Or what matters to you, what doesn't matter to you? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Suppose in a case like in Bangalore, this MP who is a Buddhist guru, and now he's accepting not accepting, initiating disciples, but he's like giving them instructions, and he's getting karma from them as his guru.
Oh, he's getting karma from all over the place. Yeah, Prabhupada mentioned, in fact, I don't have it right in front of me, that the temple presidents, the GVC men, they all get karma. Because they're in a responsible position. If you mislead the people under your direction, you're not going to get consequences for that? Repercussions? Karma means consequences. It means repercussions. If I mislead people, am I going to get repercussions? Of course I am. Whether I call myself a guru, or I call myself a temple president, or I call myself a friend of the bhaktas, or whatever I call myself, if I mislead people, am I responsible? Yeah. That's karma. Any responsible person, responsible means I take responsibility. Therefore, I have to give the right instruction. Right instruction means what the spiritual master has said. Therefore, we find in the previous verse, Anyanindari Shunyahidam Ipsita Sangalabhya Shushrushaya Bhajana Vigyam Ananyamanya Nindari Shunyahidam Ipsita Sangalabhya. That who's an advanced devotee? Bhajana Vigya, expert at performing devotional service. Bhajan means following the principles of devotional service, worshipping the Lord. Bhajana Vigya. Vigya. You've got, how's Prabhupada translated? One who is advanced in devotional service. Vigya. He has understanding. Ananyam Anyanindari Shunyahidam. And his heart is devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Take that as a hint. The publishers of literature dedicated to criticizing everyone in sight may not meet this criterion. We need to find someone who's not interested in sadhu ninda. Not interested in sadhu ninda, adi, and so on. Jeepsita Sangalabhya, that's the person whose association is desirable. Now I'm criticizing, so I guess my association is undesirable too. But we have to see, it's this person simply, their occupation in life to find fault with others? Is that what I'm looking for as my guide? This one's rotten, this one poisoned his spiritual master, this one's, they're all off the wall. Maybe, if everybody's really so, gone off and there's only, a handful of great souls who've realized the truth, you can put your money there and bet on it if you want. Good luck. So we have to find a person who's actually a sadhu. His heart is actually not hard and nasty and what is that? Nice critico, expert in insulting others. Not that. But it takes pleasure in hearing and chanting. Devotional life. Some other question? Yes.
How is it when you get to know a spirit master and say, okay, when you accept a spirit master, you should surrender everything to him and see him as God himself? What is when you, after some time, maybe it's not.
We'll come to that. That's coming. What do we do if we've accepted someone and then there's some doubts? We'll come to that. That's planned. Coming attractions.
A bunch of people in devotees in responsible positions getting karma. If they are meant to be doing devotional service, there should be no karma.
If they do devotional service, there won't be karma. therefore one should have no separate interest. If I have a separate interest and I mislead people, I'll get it. And if I simply execute the orders of nimitta matra, probably just like a tool. So if, you know, if I shoot Pradyumna, the gun is not sent to jail. I did it, not the gun. If you become Krishna's tool, then Krishna is responsible, not you. Arjuna killed so many people, there was no karma, because he was simply Krishna's instrument. Krishna told him to kill all these people. All right, he did it. Prabhupada gives the example that in wartime, you kill so many men and they give you a medal. And in peace, you kill even one man and they hang you. You're the same person, but now you killed one man on your own initiative, you're hanged. But when you were ordered by the superior authority, you killed, 300 men and they gave you a medal. So nimitta matra, one has to act strictly as the agent of the higher authority, not on one's own separate initiative. Yes?
So basically, you say that Prabhupada, most often he emphasized that...
Loud.
Srila Prabhupada most often he emphasized that the spiritual master should just deliver the message as it is.
Yes. And strictly follow.
Apani
Achri Prabhu
Jivireshikai. And also, but also sometimes, like in this case, it's this Uttamadikai stuff.
Yeah, it comes up here.
Yeah, and it's difficult to reconcile it.
It's what? It's difficult to reconcile it.
And you basically say that you choose what is important to you.
You're the final person. I'm not going to accept the spiritual master for you. I'm not going to tell you what you have to do. Finally, it's up to you. I have to look at it, or if I'm the person, I have to look at it and say, here are the instructions. Most of them are like this. There's also this one. It's not nothing. It's in a book. It has, weight. I can't just toss it out and pretend it doesn't exist. It's there. Now, given all these instructions, what do I do? And you can take guidance, you can take counsel, you can take... But finally, who decides? You do, right?
Yeah, Maharaj, would it be fair to say that Jayananda, he was expert engaging people according to their propensity, so would it be fair to say that the sensitivity of the administration for medicine for a particular disciple, that's coming from their level of purity, their realization from Krishna. Yeah? So, what would you say that was a fair sort of statement? Or?
I don't know if I'd say it was a clear statement.
Maybe service more proper than a particular stage in the development.
Say it again.
Maybe a particular service would be more appropriate for a particular person in that stage of their development in Krishna consciousness, so they could get.
Well, everyone's got a particular service that's suitable for him. But if we're talking about Jayananda Prabhu, here was a person who was expert in engaging others, whose activities were so pleasing to the spiritual master, who had no separate interest, who gave so much less importance to his body that he took the money that was given for his medical treatment and gave it to Prabhupada for publishing books, and ultimately received the letter, or I'm sure he received it, it was sent from Prabhupada, saying, well, I think you went back to Godhead. So what is the level of such a person? And would you accept such a person as a spiritual master? That seems to be the question. And there, you know, answer it for yourself.
I like to ask this practically how it looks in ISKCON, and when someone's guru left from that position, he's not actually
leaving. Questions I've already told Pradyumna we're going to come to later. Got a whole section planned for it. Shall we move on then, or do you have more questions here? Let us move on then, with whatever time is still at our disposal. All of these instructions are here in Prabhupada's books in different places. Prabhupada's, so it's for us to think about it and understand what is Prabhupada telling us. It's a deep subject matter.
Sorry, maybe one more. Maybe what might happen is if we continue like this, is that every devotee who says this God will take 11, 12 years to get initiated before they can decide finally that, oh, okay, I have sufficient level of understanding before I can make a decision to choose a spiritual master. Would that be...
Well, it's up to you. Prabhupada waited 11 years before he accepted initiation. Of course, he said he immediately accepted in his heart, but one thing is, you know, maybe this will happen, maybe that will happen. It won't happen. But if some people wait longer, that's not the catastrophe of the universe. And if some people prefer, you know, there are people who've waited and waited and waited, and then they decided. And then there were people who decided one day and changed their mind the next. You know, the day after initiation, they changed their mind. And then there's people who didn't either, you know. They made a relatively swift choice and were happy about it. And you'll see similar patterns going on. They'll be into the future, I predict, even if I give courses, you know, encouraging people to think about it. There'll be, you know, people who'll make an instant decision. There'll be people who'll be in the middle someplace, and there'll be people who'll, you know, wait 20 years. And knowledge is knowledge. We're not going to hold back because the consequence might be that people are going to wait longer and that would somehow affect our, you know, devotional demographics or something. We're just going to, you know, read the books and talk about what they say and let the chips fall where they may. Right? And we're going to go on to text 6. Drishtai sabhava janitair vabushascha doshair na prakrita tamiha bhakta janasya pashet gangam vasam na kalubud buddha pena pankar brahma dravatvam apagachati niradharma. We've learned about cultivating 6 kinds of loving exchanges among devotees. We've talked about associating with devotees at different levels. And now in this text, we are learning of a great pitfall to avoid in associating with pure devotees. Prabhupada begins by pointing out that Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service, is performed on the liberated platform. And therefore, a person situated in devotional service is not affected by the modes of material nature. And Prabhupada quotes, Mamcha Yogi Abhachane, Bhakti Yogena Sevate, Sagunan Samiti Chaitan, Brahmabhuyaya Kopa. A person who is engaged in unalloyed devotional service is engaged in the constitutional function of the soul, and that all happens beyond the material platform. It's transcendental to the material considerations. Therefore, one should not see a pure devotee from a materialistic point of view. And one should not consider his bodily defects or consider him an ordinary conditioned soul. I gave the example previously that some devotee came into the temple in the early 60s, and Prabhupada was leading kirtan, and then Prabhupada finished the kirtan and began the class. He put on his glasses, and the devotee thought, what is this? He's a swami and he needs glasses. He later became a disciple, but that's an example of seeing in terms of the material consideration. You know, if his eyesight isn't 20/20, how could he be a swami? That's seeing from the material platform. I specifically asked Srila Prabhupada about this on a morning walk on April 8th, 1975, here in Mayapur. I said, the acharyas know everything and they're perfect in everything, but sometimes from our material viewpoint, we see some discrepancies. Prabhupada said, because material viewpoint. The viewpoint is wrong. Therefore, you find discrepancies. So, we should think that we have the defect? Yes. Acharyas explained, bhakti samshana, glorification of bhakti. One who's preaching the cult of devotional service, he's acharya. Then why should you find any discrepancy? Because we see, for instance, sometimes the acharya may seem to forget something or not know something. So from our point of view, if someone has forgotten, that is an imperfection. Now, it's probably pushing it pretty hard because we've all heard Prabhupada forget verses or something. I'm just now forgetting. Anyway, that was the thing. From our viewpoint, if someone forgets, that's an imperfection. No, no, no. Then you do not understand. Acharya is not God, omniscient. He is servant of God. His business is to preach bhakti cult. That is acharya. And I said, and that is the perfection? That is the perfection. Hare Krishna. So we have a misunderstanding about what perfection is. Yes, perfection is here. How he is preaching bhakti cult. That's all. Again, see Prabhupada's emphasis. How he is preaching bhakti cult. Just as a matter of interest, after this morning walk, you've heard, all my godbrothers jumped on my case. You know, they were all big shots of sannyasis, GBC men. I was a brahmachari back then. So they all got on my case. You know, that was so offensive. How could you ask Prabhupada that? You were, you know, banging on my head. So then after the class, I went up to Srila Prabhupada's room. I said, Srila Prabhupada, what is that? I said, was that offensive, that question? Prabhupada said, what is that? And I said, what the question was. Prabhupada said, not offensive, just ignorant. We have an expression in English, it takes one to know one. And Prabhupada says, unless one is actually a devotee, he cannot see another devotee perfectly. Our tendency is to see from the material platform. Prabhupada talks about what these bodily defects are. What are some of them? Yes?
Bad color of skin.
Yeah, bad complexion.
Born in a low family.
Born in a low family.
Deformed body.
Physical deformity. Disease, infirmity. These are all material discrepancies. Vyasadeva was known to be very ugly. But he's the author of all the Vedic literature. So these are not to be considered. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions old age, harshness, and lethargy. Old age is another whole suite of defects. And harshness may be there. It's not only physical, maybe mental. If someone has a, you know, we talked about people's moods. And I don't like his mood. But that may be there, that a devotee may be very, even Prabhupada, you know, some people didn't like him because he was so strong. Sometimes Prabhupada was downright harsh. You are a fool. What else can be said about you? Oh, and Prabhupada wanted to cut somebody up. That person would be cut in a thousand pieces. And so someone could say, oh, your Swamiji is so harsh, or he gets angry, or, you know, whatever. So this should not be considered. In the Padma Purana, I've seen it, it's quoted as Padma Purana, but I've seen it also in Prema Vivarta, so I'm not sure which reference is right. Sarvachara Vivarjita Shadatiyo Vratya Jagat Vanchaka. Even if a person is a very bad character, a cheater, devoid of proper behavior, malicious, devoid of some scars, and full of worldly desires, if he surrenders to the Lord, he must be considered a sadhu. And Srila Prabhupada quotes, of course, Bhagavad Gita, Api Chet Sudaracharo Padate Mamananda. Sadhureva, Eva, emphatically. Sadhureva Samantavya, Samyag Vyavasito, he. Again, an emphasis, he. Hisaha. This Eva and he are emphasizers. Even if a devotee sometimes seems to engage in abominable activities, Sudurachar, he should be considered a sadhu, a saintly person, because his actual identity is that of one engaged in the loving service of the Lord. In other words, he is not to be considered an ordinary human being. Durachar means bad behavior, and Sudurachar means who? Really bad behavior. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam anandita. But he's engaged in the service of the Lord without giving it up. No. Sadhur eva samanta. He has to be considered a sadhur because his determination is right. Even if there's some fault in the execution, even if he does something terrible, still we have to think he's a sadhu. And even the nice people of this material world, the Gyanis, Karmis, if they're not devotees, yeah, even maybe think they're sadhus in a certain sense, but not. Krishna doesn't, he's not speaking about these people. Bhajate imam anandita, that's the qualification. You had a question?
Yeah, I wanted to just about this Ananya Bhakti.
Yes?
It seems like that this is the main point.
Yes, this is the main point. That is exactly the main point. That he's fixed in devotional service. He's not going to give it up. We see that. Sometimes someone has, you know, does something. Ananya Bhakti doesn't mean that in his activity you haven't seen any deviation, because that's Sudarachar. Right? Sudarachar means deviation. But Ananya Bhakti means, even if there is some deviation in his activity, but he's sold out. Prabhupada gave the example. Back in the 1960s when Brahmananda Prabhu was the temple president at 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada said, even if you see Brahmananda Prabhu walking down the street smoking a cigarette, you have to consider him a sadhu. You know, someone has given his life to Krishna, but something is there, some, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that sometimes material life and spiritual life cross, and so there may be some circumstantial fall down. But Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma, right, quickly, what have I done? It comes back to this thing. And we have examples in our society, people who, you know, have done something really bad, but they just can't stay away from serving Prabhupada, serving Krishna, serving the society. And so they come back up to the standard. So they have to be considered sadhus. They shouldn't be, rejected. Yes.
Sometimes we see in our society, like, for this connected with these people from shopping, some of them who apparently regret their activities in their philosophy, they were put in some position in this kind of game. Opinion is this is a mistake, because they soon later actually it was proved that they didn't actually.
Well, that's management. You know, who you trust, who you don't trust.
My question is, what is the procedure for those who regret?
Go talk to the GBC about what their official procedures are. That's, I'm not going to say that here. But it's, it's not that if you ever lived in Bangalore and signed on to their agenda, you can never be considered a sadhu. You can never be, admitted to the society of devotees. People have done far worse. We've got lots of examples of people who've, signed on to one cuckoo thing or another. And then later thought, what did I do? Because they're sincere. Okay. And in Prabhupada's time, there were such examples also. Where Prabhupada, he accepted them back, that's all. But he's come back, he said about one disciple, they have come back with sincerity. Yes?
I want to ask about all these conditionings. It looks like they are due to material nature of the body.
Yes. Therefore, you have to not see that. That this person, has got a harsh nature, or this person speaks with a southern accent, or this person speaks with a lisp, or this person is, speaks in a monotone, or this person is very excitable, or this person, has got a, he's got a bad leg, or this person's got a, smiles, his teeth are crooked, or these are all the results of the material body. These are all the things that are there in the material body, or the material subtle body. But they're not what matters. What matters is how this person is engaged in the service of the Lord. If you see Srila Prabhupada as a Bengali, that's offensive. It's also glorious, we'd like that Prabhupada was a Bengali. But if you think, Prabhupada as a, like some people, they a Bengali businessman. No. That's the material point of view. You see these things in superficial biographies that he was a pharmacist and he gave it up and became a guru. They're trying to make it that it was just another business. They leave out that he how many years of bhajan he was doing in his householder life and afterwards. They just make it, he's a pharmacist and then he became a guru. That's their vision. They can't get more than that because they're mundaners. So we should not be mundane like that. We have to see, the thing to look for is how this person is serving Krishna. Prabhupada did that even with that, like some bum who came into 22nd Avenue and put a roll of toilet paper on the altar. Prabhupada said, he's begun his devotional service.
Why did he put a roll of toilet
paper? Huh? Because he was a bum. He was drunk out of his mind, for sure. Somebody crazy. Everybody was more or less crazy down there. Prabhupada said he is not in right condition. I think that was the quote. He is not in right condition, but he has begun his serving. You know, had the idea somehow or other to give something. And the great souls, that's what they see. This person has done some service. So that's what we're, and that's just a person who's, you know, done that. So what to speak of a person who's, you know, given his life for the service of Krishna? And we're seeing how he's, you know, he's from Brooklyn, or he's from Tanzania, or he's from this family or that family, or, you know, all of our stupid mundane calculations. That we shouldn't do. Yes?
Loud, please.
Which option?
If we see the person like deformed with a deformed body, and that is offensive. But if we like see like, oh, this guru has a very healthy body and has a beautiful voice and all this,
that's superficial also. You know, this person is so nice looking. That's also superficial. It's good. The good features you can appreciate. But it's not the real feature. He may have a very healthy body, so now you're appreciating, and then later his body becomes healthy, unhealthy. Now I reject. You know, as long as he was, you know, like Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he was healthy and energetic, and so that was attractive. You know, he could dance in front of the right. But not that when he became sick, it was, well, okay, he was good before. He was equally transcendental in his diseased, physically diseased condition as he was in his physically healthy condition. So we may appreciate that a person is born in a good family, or that he's very educated, or this or that. That's not the real qualification. That's, you know, that's nice, but it doesn't matter ultimately.
So it's not offensive to see a person?
No, you can, as long as you appreciate it, it's not offensive. Maybe superficial, but it's not offensive. Yes?
About the connection between this material point of view and defect, and also in the beginning he said that a candidate for devotion should try to develop the mode of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't really catch that. How this.
I'm not seeing what two things you're putting together for what purpose. I don't catch the question.
Because sometimes he looks like, for example, you said, Maharaj, that such kind of elevated devotees, it may look like that they are acting.
Therefore, you have to see the essence of what's going on. If you just look and say, oh, he yelled at that person. And for you, yelling means passion, and yelling means, you know, harshness, and it's not a spiritual quality. Okay, that's your calculation, but are you looking to see what this person's position is in terms of how he's serving and preaching? That's the point. That's the point. Even, and now we're talking not just about, you know, the person that I'm thinking about accepting as a guru, any devotee. Any devotee. If you see only, you know, how he's this, or how he's that, or how he's that, then are you missing something? Are you missing the point? The real point is, out of millions and millions of persons, this person is surrendered to Krishna. No, I like that person better. He may not be a devotee, but he's, you know, he speaks very nicely and he's got a good education. You nitwit, you just blew it. You know, the person whose character is bad but who's surrendered to Krishna is a sadhu. And the other fellow is just a nice guy with a good education. This one's dear to Krishna. That one, you know, he's an also ran. Clear? I want to deliver on a promise here. I said we were going to deal with circumstances. Of course, this is going to put us over time, undoubtedly. Oh yeah, we're going to be way over time. which we're going to run into tomorrow, no doubt about it. But okay, we're going to run into tomorrow. What are we going to do? That's the way it goes. Should I take a question? Or should, no, I'm going to embark on this interesting topic about which we got several questions already, and we will run into tomorrow also. We're talking about not considering a devotee an ordinary human being because of some sudurachar, some bad behavior or whatever. There are circumstances under which a guru may be rejected. And that was a question that I fended off a couple of times earlier. There are three verses that are consistently quoted by Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, and here they are. From Narada Pancharatra, Yo vyakti nyaya rahitam anyayena shrinoti ya tabubo nadakam ghodam rajata kalam akshayam. Anyone who poses as an acharya but gives unauthorized instructions, and anyone who claims to be his disciple and listens to such instructions, both of these are bound for hell, eternally. Akshaya means perpetual hell. Gurur apyavaliptasya karya karya majanataha utpata pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. If the guru becomes attached to sense gratification, loses his sense of duty, and follows a degraded path, a path other than devotional service to the Lord, he should be rejected. That's Mahabharata. And this is Hari Bhakti Vilas. Avaishnavo padishtena mantrena nirayam brajet punascha vidhina samyag grahayet Vaishnavad Guru. If one receives a mantra from an Avaishnava, illicitly connected with women, devoid of attachment to Krishna, one goes to hell. Therefore, one must take initiation again from a Vaishnava Guru according to scriptural rules. These are the three Shastric statements that we get in this connection. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who quotes these, makes clear that if there's some, that if the guru is not against Vaishnavas, if he's not addicted to sense gratification, if there's simply some discrepancy, then don't reject him. But if these criteria are there, then he should be rejected. Yes?
So, that is, it sounds complicated when you see that one side should accept the guru and surrender everything to him, and he shouldn't find fault in him, we should see him, same as Krishna, and then when you make something for them, we should reject him. So, you know,
I've noted that in a paper I published some time ago, that we're trained to accept the spiritual master as being Sakshad Hari, as being as good as Krishna. Of course, Prabhupada said not that he's Krishna, but because he's the servant of Krishna. So we put full faith and surrender. And then we're given, you know, an elaborate warning book. But if this happens, bail out. If that happens, bail out. If this happens, bail out. I have, actually, now that I think about it, I have a very interesting instruction about that. If I can, yeah. This is a, boy, Siddhasroop Maharaj comes up a lot. In 1976, Honolulu. This same man, he's guru, so long he gives real knowledge of Krishna. And the same man, he's ordinary man, as soon as he cannot give. Same thing, just like a stone doll, when it is worshipped according to the regulative principles, Krishna. And the same doll, kept in the sculptor's showroom, it is stone. So if we keep our movement pure, then you are as strong as Krishna. And as soon as you deviate from it, immediately, ordinary. This is the secret. Now it is up to us how to keep it pure. Then no enemy can kill us. Does that help? He's bona fide when he does his job. Just like the policeman. He's acting, he's doing his job, he's acting according, he's got the badge, he's got the work, he's doing everything fine. He's a policeman. You put your faith in him, you ring 911 or whatever the emergency number is, and he comes in his car and you say, sir, officer, help. And the same man, when he arrests some woman and then rapes her, he's thrown out. He's thrown out. Right? What for? You're a disgrace to the force. You have to hand in your badge. Well, because you're not in the line of what a police... And the same thing, if some small infraction, then they call him into the office and say, Bill, you've been on the force 20 years and you have a sterling record, but, can't do this kind of thing. You beat that guy pretty bad, and we're not supposed to do that. And Bill goes back out in the force and he doesn't do that kind of thing. But there are things that will get even Bill thrown off the force. Well, you're not representing the city of Los Angeles or whatever it is. So Prabhupada said, the same man, so long as he gives real knowledge of Krishna, he's guru. And the same man, he's ordinary man, as soon as he cannot give. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines, or these Shastric statements define what it is mean that he cannot give. He's giving unauthorized instructions. Now we should all dress in saris and cultivate this mood of because this is what devotional service ultimately is. This is what Prabhupada, unauthorized instructions. You listen to that, you'll go to hell. And if he tells you that, he'll go to hell. Both go to hell together, so reject it. He loses his sense of duty, becomes attached to sense gratification, gives up devotional service. You don't want to follow him. Pratyagavidhiyate, you should reject him. Or avaishnava, he's not a Vaishnava. Now, typically this happens, somebody says, but I'm already initiated by a guru. Well, what kind of guru? Oh, he's one of these typical Mayavadi businessmen or whatever it is. No, that doesn't count. Prabhupada never hesitated to give initiation again to someone who'd been initiated by this rishi or that Ananda or whatever. But not to someone who received initiation from Vaishnava. A Vaishnava Upadishma, you got initiated and the person wasn't a Vaishnava, forget it. Or again he becomes not a Vaishnava, gives up the service of Krishna, and forget it. What can he do for you? See? Yes? Yes.
Previously, we've learned that in Vaishnava class there are no purification rules necessary to come back to the spiritual
path. I'm sorry, I was distracted. Start again.
Previously, we learned that there are no purification rules necessary for Vaishnava to engage.
Right. If the guru deviates and then returns, can the disciples return to him? In principle, yes. That's explained by Narahari Sarkar in Krishna Bhajanamrita. If a spiritual master commits a wrongful act, one should privately confront him for his rectification, using logically presented conclusions from Shastra, but one is not to give him up. If one thinks one shouldn't reprimand a spiritual master, one should consider this statement, and then he quotes that if this guru becomes attached to sense gratification, loses the sense of duty, so on. With this understanding, everything becomes perfect. Now, yeah. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, let's see. He says there are two instances. He says it's true that a Diksha Guru should not be rejected, but there are two instances where one may legitimately reject him. First, a disciple may have accepted a spiritual master without thoroughly ascertaining whether the spiritual master was a Vaishnava, practically conversant with transcendental knowledge. Later, however, the disciple may realize that the absolute objective will not be accomplished through the instructions of that guru. In that case, the guru should be rejected. And he quotes these three things again. You accepted some, you didn't know what you're doing, you accepted some Mayavadi as your guru. Yeah, don't worry about it. The second instance in which one may reject the guru is when the guru was at the time of one's initiation a Vaishnava conversant in the absolute truth, but later, due to bad association, became a Mayavadi or an offender to the Vaishnavas. That guru should be rejected. If the guru is not a Mayavadi or offender to Vaishnavas, nor addicted to sinful life, then one should not reject him, even if he has a lack of knowledge. Rather, showing him due respect, with his permission, one should take spiritual instructions from an advanced devotee and serve that devotee properly. Okay, so you may think that my guru is, I thought he was really very conversant with the science, now I see he's really, you know, just can't take me very far. But he's a Vaishnav, he's following the regular principles, he's not doing anything bad. You can't reject him just because he doesn't know as much as you thought he knew, or no, but you can, with his permission, can I take instruction from such and such person about such and that you can do. But with respect. That you can do. But you can't reject him. Because what has he done wrong? He's a Vaishnava. He's serving Krishna. Sadhu. There's nothing wrong there. But if he's not a Vaishnava, or he becomes not a Vaishnava, then you can reject him. Otherwise, Narahari Sarkar says there's some temporary thing. Oh, we may be a little patient. That's there. Well, that we understand. That we understand. And then he says, Jiva Goswami is saying, who talks about this same topic with the same three verses in Bhakti Sandarbha. When one finds that the guru is if one finds himself without a guru with the good qualifications previously described, and that's, as I recall, Shabde Pare Janishnatam, he's heard from the authorities and he's has full faith in the Supreme. One should find one advanced devotee and serve him constantly, and that will give one the highest benefit. And if that advanced devotee is merciful toward him and desires to reciprocate, acting like a bona fide guru in his attitude, then one should accept him. And he quotes a verse I quoted earlier, Yasya yat sangati punso manibat syat satad gunaha svakulardhyay tato dhimam svayutyan eva sangtriye. By associating with a person, one develops his qualities, just as a piece of glass acquires the qualities of a touchstone by coming in touch with it. Therefore, an intelligent person, for the sake of his own spiritual community, should associate with more advanced devotees from his own sampradaya, his own group. So, in that situation, one somehow finds oneself without a guru, all right, serve an advanced devotee. Serve an advanced devotee. And see what develops. See what kind of relationship develops. He says that if that advanced devotee is not merciful toward one, one will not develop a worshipful attitude toward him. He's advanced, but he's not giving me anything. He doesn't, you know, he's not being merciful to me. He's not helping me. But otherwise, you approach an advanced devotee, you're serving him, he's reciprocating with you. Well, then one thing will follow to the next. Okay? I regret that time has expired. We may not have exhausted this topic. If you do have still questions about this, you can save them until tomorrow. We also have perhaps half the discussion that we wanted to have on today's verse, so we'll resume that tomorrow. Somehow we'll fit everything in, won't we, with the number of lessons available, without extending over till Saturday, which is still an option, which we're trying to avoid. Is there anything else before we go that I need to do, housekeeping or anything?